did communism die in the 90s like we've been told? Could your president be an active communist? How many of our beliefs are our own beliefs, and how many of our beliefs are induced?
The Beacon Podcast.
We're going to examine in quite a bit of detail the communist theory and practice of revolution, particularly as applied to the United States. Now, this will not be something dreamed up out of thin air. This will be the strategy as taught by them and advocated by them in their own manuals, in their textbooks, and in their schools. Now, the organization of this material will lead to three rather startling conclusions. The first is that the communist program for revolution in America is divided into two phases, violent and nonviolent. The second conclusion is that the strategy for violent revolution calls for chaos, anarchy, mass confusion and panic among the people, a crisis in government, and then, out of the vacuum, the sudden seizure of power by communist-led guerrilla bands. The third conclusion is that the nonviolent phase of revolution actually is more important to the communists and more potentially dangerous to us. Now, the strategy for this phase calls for the gradual transition of our government into a communist regime, done peacefully and legally, but under the banner of socialism.
Everybody.
This is the time, people.
Thank you for downloading the Beacon Podcast. We fucking love you.
This is the fucking place.
We got a plenty of love for all of you. I don't agree with you, Phil Collins.
The land of confusion.
With your weird, balding, swirly hairdo. Plenty of love for all my American people, people around the world.
Yes. Freedom-loving people out there.
Damn right.
All of my non-douchebags, this is the goddamn quest to end douchebaggery forever. And we might as well define douchebaggery. Nick, what does douchebaggery mean to you?
Just fucking narcissists that want to fucking... Everything's about themselves or, you know, dudes that wear jeans with a thick fucking threading that the pockets have a button on and some kind of... bedazzled design on it. What the fuck is that? Just get some fucking regular jeans, man. But those guys always have hot chicks, and it makes you kind of want to be a douchebag.
Well, why do you think that? Why do you think hot chicks would go for a guy like that?
Oh, man. I guess those jeans are expensive, so they got cash.
See, I think that there's this weird thing called style been going on. But style is kind of a form of cultural Marxism in a way, where whatever you see on TV from somebody that you've been told is an authority figure on fashion, it could look like dog shit, And it does. A lot of times it looks like absolute dog shit. But if it's got a big name person doing it and there are big name people behind it, all it takes is a few years and then people start wearing dog shit.
Yep. And I didn't know you were going to ask me that, but I just thought of the first douchebag I ran across like recently, you know? But I went and got sushi. I think I told you the sushi story last time about I better have four fucking rattlesnake rolls or and you're not going to charge me for them.
Was he bedazzled?
Yeah. But I went to the same sushi place yesterday to get to-go food.
Mm-hmm.
And chicks can be douchebags, too.
Yeah.
This fucking chick... Dude, I went... It was middle of the week. And I'm getting to-go food, you know, for dinner. And it's fucking packed. Like, I didn't think it was going to be packed in the middle of the week. The sushi bar we like to go to. So, I didn't call in advance. I just walked in, put in my order. But it was packed to the max. Like, people waiting outside, a fucking line, like crazy, right?
Yeah.
Well, since I have nothing to do, but I did order a beer to sit there and wait, you know, so I'm standing there feeling awkward because I'm standing behind people trying to enjoy their sushi, and here I am.
Oh, don't feel awkward, buddy.
Over them with my beer, but it's packed. I'm crowded, you know? But I can't help but just, like, see what's going around, you know? Well, here comes, you know, hot milk blonde chick coming up.
Let's call her Miss Thang.
Miss Thang, you know, and her bedazzled. I think douchebags and bedazzling just go hand in hand for some reason.
Maybe the crystals, the Swarovski crystals, actually like funnel the light into the body and it actually like lights up the chakras.
Negatively impacts their brain to make them not think that anybody else in the world fucking is important at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
But so she comes up and...
this is good. A good way to illustrate that saying that all that... What is it called? All that glistens is not gold.
Exactly. And this fucking bitch, she's a cunt straight out, dude. There's no other word for it. Comes up and she's like, yes, walks past all these people that are obviously waiting to have their dinner, right?
Yep.
Comes up and she goes, I couldn't help but notice that those people are ready to leave soon. So I would like for, I have my mother-in-law and my baby with me, and I would like to sit there when they leave.
Was she up?
No. She just walked through the fucking door, dude.
So why did she think that she had
douchebag? She's a fucking cunt, bro. She's a hot blonde chick. Nobody's ever told her no in her life.
What'd they say?
They tell her, well, there's a lot of other people that are ahead of you. Like, she just straight up walked in and was, like, looking for a place to sit.
Yeah, maybe she didn't know, though, that other people were waiting. What'd she say?
It was more than obvious. There's people sitting outside. Yeah. There's people standing in a whole fucking huge line.
She's just been dumb. What'd she say after that?
Okay, the person that works there goes, no, because there's other people waiting there. And she goes, you don't understand. I have my mother-in-law and my baby waiting here.
So
we're not going to sit here and wait.
She goes,
we are not going to wait. And that, you know, the girl that's working there, she's got plenty of shit to do besides deal with cunt number fucking one.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck that you're hot and you're blonde and you got your fucking matching sweatsuit that's all sparkly and shit.
Well, why do you think that your problem is more significant?
You brought your problem to the fucking sushi bar, bitch.
Yeah.
Hey, how about you don't take your fucking baby to a sushi bar?
Yeah, mercury poisoning, bitch.
And then, she had to go right around. He goes, well, how about the people next to them? They're going to be leaving soon, you know, after them. She goes, yeah, but the other people... I mean, there's like 30 fucking people waiting to sit down.
Dude, I used to want to, like, I love cooking. I love, like, the whole bar scene, like good IPAs and, like, good beers on draft and people that really appreciate it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I like that, but, dude, the more and more, like, you tell me stories, like, the less and less I would ever be interested in owning either a bar or a restaurant.
No, I mean, you just got to straight out police yourself, like... We will not accept your fucking behavior here.
I would have a rule against douchebaggery, I think.
For sure. For sure.
No douchebag.
No bedazzled jeans, bro. I know you want to spend money here and get laid. And you probably will walk out with the hottest chick in the fucking bar.
And get out.
I'm only joking.
Get out.
Wear whatever you want, but it's just funny. Like,
no,
like
dudes obviously
paid for those and thought that was a good idea.
But there could be a correlation between one's attitude and the risks that the stylistic risks that they choose to take. There could be a correlation.
It's all good.
Perhaps.
But, I mean, I'm only joking around about that being a douchebaggery thing. We were talking about... People who tell you you're a victim. People that tell you everyone's sick and that you should conform to a certain agenda. You know?
Yeah.
People who are just against the Constitution itself, you know?
Well, the telling you that you don't, that you shouldn't have a gun. See, at work is even people that would call themselves conservatives is
or even, patriots.
Even when I ask them a simple question like, "What do you feel about the whole vaccination thing?" They're like, "Well, you know," and they are not. None of it is original thought. They are simply repeating to me almost verbatim the shit that I see on the news. Mm-hmm. Almost verbatim. Well, there is that, but you've also got to understand, you know, that the public concern and herd immunity is a true thing. And dude, it's weird that it, to me, it looks like nobody anymore has original thought.
No.
That people aren't thinking their own thoughts, that they, that like we were asking on the introduction, that most thought, most beliefs now are induced beliefs. And with that, I would like to actually play a small clip, if I could.
Go for it, bro. Well, I was just going to say real quick about the vaccination.
Yep.
And you probably disagree with me, but if I had kids, you know, at that age, I would vaccinate them, you know, for the reason that I don't want them to get measles. I don't want them to get mumps, shit that hasn't been around in, you know, forever. These diseases are, and I've never seen a kid or know somebody who has a kid that has measles or mumps, but the news will say, oh, it's fucking an outbreak. It's shit's going
everywhere.
Crazy.
You know, zero people in the last 10 years have died.
That being said, I don't understand the people who are like, well, I can't have my kid hang out with a kid who's not getting vaccinated. Like, what the
this
fuck?
Whole thing,
wasn't
media,
your kid just vaccinated?
It's media.
What's the fucking
hype
point?
It's, remember I said a couple shows ago, if you guys think shit is started to get crazy, just strap on your seatbelts and enjoy the ride, because you're about to witness the socialism show. And the socialism show is going, this is what it looks like.
And people think it's
this
a good idea.
What, like, the socialism show.
The state's going to tell
like
you how to raise your fucking children.
Yeah.
You can't even have kids walk their fucking little sister to the school anymore. It's a fucking makes that news. You're a horrible mother. Yeah. Your 10-year-old son walked his little sister to school.
So on that
went,
note,
you gave him money to go buy their fucking lunch.
On that note, I'm going to play Cooper discussing induced beliefs.
Sorry, but fuck that. Not Cooper, but
Cooper with induced
beliefs. The state telling you to fucking how to raise your fucking children.
I know.
Charles Hoyfort said this: almost all people of all eras are hypnotics. Their beliefs are induced beliefs. The proper authorities saw to it that the proper belief should be induced, and people believed properly. J.H. Towson in Clowns said this, quote, as the mountebank delivered his harangue, the clown would repeatedly poke his head out from behind the curtain, making fun of everything his master said, parodying his patter and twisting the meaning of his words. The mountebank played the perfect straight man meanwhile. Here he was, trying so hard to hawk his wares, and his assistant was doing everything possible to undermine sales. The merriment was, of course, intentional. While the clown seemingly encouraged the public not to buy the proffered merchandise, the mountebank knew full well that the bystanders would easily be converted into customers as soon as they forgot that they were, in fact, supposed to be buying. Once the audience had been effectively hypnotized, once its judgment and willpower had been weakened, the real sales pitch could begin, end quote. And in the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, Dr. Albert Mackey, 33rd degree, defines hoodwink as, quote, a symbol of the secrecy, silence, and darkness in which the mysteries of our art should be preserved from the unhallowed gaze of the profane, end quote.
Some deep shit. We're going to go right from that into the second part of our G. Edward Griffin's exposition on the socialist revolution in America.
Let's start right at the beginning with conclusion number one, which is that the communist program for revolution in America is divided into two phases, violent and nonviolent. Now, a good place to begin is with this communist booklet entitled On the Nature of Revolution, the Marxist Theory of Social Change. It was written by Herbert Aptheker, one of the leading theoreticians of the Communist Party in this country. And on page 11, Aptheker says, the equating of violence with the nature and process of revolution is not correct. Violence may or may not appear in such a process, and its presence or absence is not a determining feature of the definition. Now, this comes as quite a surprise to many of us because for years we've been used to thinking of communist revolutions only as those which involve the overthrow of governments by force and violence. Now, that entire phrase has been written and spoken so often as a single concept that many of us haven't even considered the possibility that the communists might have another approach to their goal, that they might overthrow the government without force and violence, that they might, in fact, plan to come to power through means that properly could be called peace and politics. Now, in order to go any further, it'll be necessary for us to define a few terms. When the communists speak of the two kinds of revolution, they don't come right out and say so in plain English. Of course not. You see, they claim to be practicing something called scientific Marxism. And so they have to dress up these crude concepts in elaborate phraseology. For instance, when the communists speak of violent revolution, they describe it as a war of national liberation. Now, the so-called theory behind this is that the people of the country marked for takeover supposedly are an oppressed people. They're dominated by an imperialistic foreign power that has colonized them and exploited them. And so the communists claim that it's their duty, their historic duty, to liberate them from the yoke of fascism or imperialism or colonialism or whatever. Now, naturally, the communist orientation of the movement is played down. They prefer to identify themselves usually as a People's Army of Liberation or a National Liberation Front. Of course, this is the kind of guerrilla warfare we've seen used in China, Algeria, Cuba, South Vietnam, and many other places around the world. But there are other phrases also used to describe the same process. Occasionally, they'll refer to this violent type of revolution as an anti-imperialist war or an anti-colonialist war. But they all equal the same thing. Wars of national liberation, anti-imperialist wars, and anti-colonialist wars are all phrases used to describe that aspect of communist revolution aimed at overthrowing the government by means of force and violence. To describe their nonviolent revolution, the communists most often use the term proletarian revolution. But they also refer to it as the socialist revolution and sometimes as the anti-monopoly struggle. But here again, they all add up to the same thing. The proletarian revolution, the socialist revolution, and the anti-monopoly struggle are all merely different ways in which the communists describe their strategy for overthrowing the government through non-violent means. Well, all right, having defined some of the key phrases, we can return now to the communist literature and be able to understand what they mean when they use these words. Now, in 1960, the representatives from communist parties all over the world gathered in Moscow and issued a joint declaration, which included this statement. Our time, whose main content is the transition of capitalism to socialism, is a time of socialist revolutions and national liberation revolutions. In other words, simply stated, we're living in an era of two kinds of revolution, one violent and the other nonviolent. Now, here's a document published by the Communist Party in this country in 1968. It's entitled The New Program of the Communist Party USA, Second Draft. And on this subject, here's what it says. Contemporary revolutions bear two distinctive marks. They are socialist, they are anti-imperialist. More than a billion human beings are now embarked on socialist revolution. A larger number is in varying stages of revolution for national liberation.
Liberation.
Yes, liberation. So that recording was back in the 60s, but it still rings true today because the final revolution in order to absolutely socialize the country hasn't happened. The Constitution is still the law of the land. It's still in effect. It hasn't been abolished. The only time it really will be abolished is if a revolution happens and the people do not squash the revolution. Because the revolution happens, this is what happens in every country. People, please, study revolutions in other countries. Study Cuba's revolution. Oh, study the revolution that is occurring in Ukraine right now, and how Crimea just seceded from Ukraine and went over towards the Russians. What you have to do is you have to understand that the people rise up, and then there's always an opportune group of people that is willing to take charge by force once the people are, once the society is collapsed. Not to mention that the people that take force of the country are the same people that instigated the revolution in the first place. It's a system. It's a socialist system. It's Marxist-Leninism. That is how to conquer countries. And this originally came about because it was a secret society plan to take over, to absolutely overthrow all the monarchs in Europe. And it worked smashingly. It started with the English Revolution, went on to the French Revolution. The American Revolution was actually a part of this agenda. As a result, we actually got the Constitution out of it, which turned out to be one of the greatest things in history, which probably that goes into a whole other subject. But that goes into that book of the Secret Destiny of America. America was planned for something a little different in the secret societies. We're getting into some deep, deep shit there. But the Beacon Podcast has to bring you guys along. We got to go by steps, or you guys won't be able to understand everything that's happened throughout history.
The Beacon Podcast is like the shovel for the shit.
And we're shoveling the shit.
Shit out of it. Of the shit.
So, we hope you dig it.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, what you see right now, though, what is in the news? Nick, what stands out in the news right now? And you can relate it to this subject. So I want people to open up their eyes and be able to see, take the blinders off and be able to see.
I feel like the news is selling fear all the time.
Sure. You scare the people into, like, well, one of them is vaccines.
Yeah.
You scare the people into, you know, eventually I think where you're going to end up with this is state mandated vaccines.
Mandate.
Yep, it'll be required for everybody. Because how do you control people? Mm-hmm. It's so easy once you see it in terms of what's actually happening.
And yeah, well, I mean, what do you do if you want to push back? Like, if you're a parent.
Well, like, the first thing you do, the best time to fight back is right now. While it's ideological.
Yeah, I don't want to be an Amish motherfucker.
Well, while it's ideological right now, there should be people right now standing up saying, hey, if people don't want a vaccine, that's their right. But what they're doing is going, well, then you're putting other people at risk. Well, you know what?
No,
you're not.
Not if they're vaccinated.
If your kids are vaccinated.
If you're selling me a product that's saying, oh, you're not going to get sick, you're not going to get this and that, why the fuck do you care if someone else isn't?
Yeah. The only excuse that I've ever heard in rebuttal to that is that there are a few people out there that cannot be vaccinated. Because of whatever health conditions they have, they can't be vaccinated. And then they're being exposed by the kids that aren't vaccinated. But I have a rebuttal to that one. And the best rebuttal to that one is, even people that are vaccinated, the first 2 weeks of their vaccination, they are contagious. They're injected with the form of whatever it is that they're being vaccinated against, they're with a weakened form of it, and they are contagious. So them alone can infect those people that can't be vaccinated. So in a fully vaccinated society, you'll still have those people that are unable to be vaccinated being infected. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We're just trying to take these lies and shut them down. Shut them down.
What about the idea that maybe, and this is a different thing, but like antibiotics, you know, won't work eventually?
Well, and they're a little different from what I those are work on bacteria.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what you're looking at is this is a question of freedom. It all boils down to a question of individual freedom. For me personally, all freedom boils down to property. Whether it's not, whether it's the stuff that you own or your body. Your body is material. It's in the material world. And if you don't even own your body, then there's no way that you'll even be able to own any property. All freedoms boil down to a matter of private property. Whether or not there is private private or public property. All freedoms boil down to that simple question. So we have to establish, is what's better for the community the best? Or is what's better for the individual the best? That's up to each person to decide that one. I am a strong advocate that the best and the only system that will ever work is one that praises private ownership,
self-ownership
of property.
Yeah, self-ownership. And it's just weird because, like, Bloomberg in New York comes out with these fucking laws, and it becomes a law where you can't drink a fucking 32-ounce soda or whatever the fuck, a
so
big gulp.
He's claiming
and people are okay with it. Like, yeah, that is a good idea. I don't want to be a fat ass. Like,
because
you,
they're indoctrinated. They're they're hypnotized.
That shit went through like this, like butter, dude. Like, yep. Oh yeah, this is a good idea.
Dude, what's funny is
you're responsible for your fucking self, people.
Modern man considers himself the most intelligent being in the history of the world, and I will argue that modern man is the dumbest being since in the whole history of the world, especially modern American man.
Do you think it's too much stimulation? Not stimulation, like around us. Like there's so much going on all the time. We're constantly working. We're constantly bombarded by entertainment and what else. Like we don't me personally, I hardly ever slow down to take stuff in, you know, unless I have to stop myself and to listen to a book on tape or a podcast or read a book. And it's just like you hardly find time to do that.
I think it's a constant bombardment of indoctrination. We've been constantly bombarded.
False advertisement. Like you're told like what your food is. McDonald's sells a salad. It's got to be good for you, right? It's fucking lettuce.
Well,
but the dressing has more calories than a fucking cheeseburger or whatever, you know.
And what I speak of more specifically is some of the subliminal influences. And this gets into subliminal studying. We went a little bit into it on like our NLP program that we did. If you guys want to learn a little bit about the subconscious brain and how it works.
Or to study neuro-linguistic programming.
Yes.
It's an interesting topic.
Yes, for sure. Please check out our You Down With NLP show, where we actually speak about what the subconscious is. And it's a part of your brain that works below your conscious level, but that thoughts can actually be implanted directly into that level of the brain that can actually rise up and influence your belief patterns. So what I think is a huge system of that process that's going on, and it's everything from your movies. Does anybody else other than me think it's really weird that all of your movies that show any kind of futuristic scenario never, ever, ever show a future society where everybody's free? No, all of them show a futuristic society where it's
depressing.
There's a one world government system. This is in order to inculcate subconscious thoughts to where you go, you just accept it eventually that
you got to filter your piss and drink it.
Oh yeah. You know what I mean? But that's how this kind of thing works. Another thing that I could give it as an example is that your average person wouldn't have access to weapons. Your average person would not be an individual. A lot of your music videos now, if you look at like your Britney Spears videos and your rap videos and a lot of these videos, they'll show one person and they'll show them like morphed and multiplied, and there'll be like five of the same of them on the screen dancing around. And what that does to the subconscious is it actually, what it does to your subconscious is it shows you that it gives you a herd mentality, where you're no longer an individual, you're part of a group. And it's there's sophisticated psychologists that are forming these ideas of how to inculcate these thought patterns into one's subconscious level of thinking. It's fascinating, but at the level that that I'm at, and that some people can, that I know that are at also, and that I plan on taking this podcast, and I hope everybody gets, is that when you start watching these movies, you're actually able to watch these movies and decipher agendas. You're totally able to pluck agendas out of them.
Once you kind of just start reading into NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, you see it all the time. Or studying propaganda.
Or music.
Techniques, yeah.
And that's why I play a lot of the songs on
this
podcast.
Not only in movies, but in marketing as well.
Yeah.
You know how they'll use fear as a technique, for example?
Fear, sex.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
they say sex
it sells. Exactly. Yeah. Fear of not having sex sells more.
Let's take a little break, buddy. I got to pee.
Yeah. I just can't believe you watch Britney Spears videos, bro.
Well, you know, I mean, one was on when I happened to be walking by it. I swear.
You got to beat up something. It's cool. I'm not judging. It's freaking
all right. We'll be back.
You and yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nick, who was that?
That was Strung Out, one of my favorite bands in the world.
Holy moly, that was awesome.
Fucking love those guys.
That was badass.
You know, if you live in the Southern California area, like close to Simi Valley, you could take guitar lessons from their guitarist.
No.
Jake Kiley. He's fucking badass, dude.
Why does he do that?
Because he digs it, dude. He's teaching. He's spreading the love of music.
That's it? He doesn't need the money. He does it.
Well, you pay him. Yeah, but I mean, no, he doesn't need the money. They travel the fucking world playing punk rock.
It's only like $1,000 an hour. It's only like $1,000 an hour.
No, it's not.
I'm kidding. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
And why haven't I done this?
Why not?
Taking lessons from one of my favorite guitar players in the world?
I would love to do it from a drummer.
Dude, their drummer's the shit. Jordan Burns. Nicest guy in the world, too.
If anybody is out there and knows anything about like how to get really good at drumming really fast, please hit me up, because that seems like the funnest shit to me.
Well, you have an electronic drum set right here in the Stu studio.
And I dabble.
You know, and I've never seen you throw down beats.
Yeah.
All these hours in the studio, and I've never seen you drop a beat in my life.
I know. I got even the cajon in here.
Can you make the beat drop, please?
Yeah.
One day?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll break it down. We'll drop it down.
I mean, drop it like it's hot, homie.
You could always drop it.
Yeah.
So, where we're going to continue with this, we're going to get on to G. Edward Griffin's next segment. And I want to preface this segment with this. The Beacon Podcast, in no way, no how, ever, would ever, ever support any kind of racism, sexism, classism, ageism, any kind of discrimination at any part. But the socialist agenda in America is to take the minority groups and make them feel underprivileged and cause them to associate with what Marx would term the proletariat. Okay, so as such, and because we are a podcast about truth, we have to put this on the show, but we have to preface it, and I'll do it after the show too, so no anybody that criticizes the show can't say shit. This is to illustrate the socialist agenda, okay? That is their plan. We do not advocate racism at all.
Fuck no. I have no patience for it at all.
Nope. People are people, and I love everybody. It does not matter what color you are at all. All right, here we go.
Be free.
In order to relate this general concept of two kinds of revolution to the specific application here in the United States, it'll be necessary for us to examine rather closely the communist position on what they describe as the Negro question. Now, basically summarized, the communist position on the Negro question is as follows. As early as 1928, the communists declared that the racial differences among our people constituted the weakest and most vulnerable point in our social fabric. By constantly probing and straining at this one spot, they calculated that eventually the cloth could be torn apart and that Americans could be divided, weakened, and perhaps even set against each other in open combat. They said in no unmistakable terms that the Negro people, because of their secondary social status and their predominant working class composition, offered greater revolutionary possibilities than any other cross-section of the population. To develop these possibilities, the communists proclaimed that the American Negro constituted a separate nation within a nation, a colony within the continental borders of the United States. The people of this nation were said to be oppressed and exploited by colonialist, imperialist, racist America. Consequently, the Communist Party called for their liberation, their right to self-determination, to break away from the United States and to set up their own nation within our borders. Now, to bring this about, of course, force and violence must be used. A war of national liberation must be fought. The territory designated for this nation to be liberated was the Black Belt in the South, those counties and states in which the Negro population was dominant. When established, the new nation was to have a Soviet-type government and be totally subservient to the Communist Party. But, and this is extremely important, the communists made it clear from the very beginning that they could never hope to capture all of the United States with a war of national liberation, only part of it. You see, elsewhere in the world, the segment of the population supposedly liberated by the communists has been a majority segment. the peasants in China, the Muslims in Algeria, all the people in Cuba. But in the United States, our Negro population is in the minority. And even if the communists should be successful in creating similar liberation movements among other segments of our people, as they're trying to do, for instance, among Mexican Americans, Puerto Ricans, and even American Indians, even if they should succeed and then amalgamate all of these together into one large liberation movement, it still adds up to a minority of the total population. And the communists are not stupid. They realize that revolution of force and violence dependent upon a minority is doomed to ultimate failure, except in those areas where they actually do constitute a majority. But they aren't going to settle for just part of the United States. They want all of it. And so they made it clear long ago that their violent war of national liberation must be secondary to the nonviolent proletarian revolution. To take the United States, all of the United States, it'll be necessary, they say, to involve white people as well as black, to create a broad coalition, a revolutionary link between the civil rights movement, organized labor, peace groups, student dissidents, and in general, to escalate their revolution in America from race war to class war. Now this, in a nutshell, is the communist position on the Negro question.
And you thought the Ferguson protests evolved naturally. And you thought Occupy Wall Street evolved naturally. No, no, no. These movements inside a country are fomented. And if you study other countries' revolutions, you can see who they're fomented by. One major symbol to look out for is the rose. One single red rose in these secret societies means world socialism. It means a few other things based on levels of reality, as they would say. But on our level of reality, it means world socialism. Just know that for right now. We'll teach you the other stuff later. Another symbol to look at is the fist in the air. The fist in the air is a symbol for revolution. And it's a socialist symbol for revolution. So that you can kind of start picking out these people. And you can kind of start seeing who belongs to what groups. And it's a shame. You know, my heart goes out to the African-American community. Because there's a lot of really good people out there. There's a lot of people that have been lied to, and because they've been lied to, they're full of hate, you know, and because of that, it causes them to do really bad things, and as a retaliation, a lot of people hate them for that. But I believe it's all fomented. I don't believe there's such thing as a bad person. I believe it's learned. I believe these things are learned. It's just like you can teach a dog how to fight by torturing it its whole life. You could teach people to hate. Mm-hmm. Well, we can unteach it. And the Beacon podcast is going to try to untouch it by injecting a little bit of love into this world. So you get to see kind of what's happening with the Ferguson riots. These people go, you know, we're being exploited, underrepresented. And then you get white America that's going, you know, shut up, close your mouth. And we see you guys looting stores all the time. You guys are animals. We got to be really careful about our beliefs and what's being inculcated to us from the media and not. One should default to the non-aggression principle. The non-aggression principle is it's always wrong to act aggressively towards another human being unless in self-defense, right? And then I would go a step further because I'm a Christian, and I would say actually it would be better to actually show people love and actually show them love and give them affection, and that can even help cure things rather than just being neutral and not making things worse. Kind of the libertarian stance. I would go a step above and say that if you interjected love into the situation, that you could actually start making things better, you know? But again, this is not a religious thing, and I am not this podcast will never go that direction just because I think it's wrong to do on this kind of a show. I think that one person's faith is kind of private, you know, and that's up to them. But just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an atheist. I have no religion at all, and I have no problem with compassion at all. I think that's the best way to try to understand someone's point of view and scenario, like what they're going for through, you know?
Do you see how libertarianism kind of always stops at just don't aggress on other people?
Yeah. It's always been the golden rule.
Yeah.
It's simple.
Well, I like just taking it a step further and saying, well, what if we all just went a step further and said, what if we actually treated people good? What if we gave to those that needed? What if we...
Well, that would be welfare, no?
No, because it's voluntary. Welfare is coerced.
It's state ran.
It's theft. You have charity versus welfare.
That recording we listened to, that was in the 60s again, right? That was recorded in the 60s.
Yeah.
What's strange to me, and as I'm a Dodgers fan, and so of course every year we have Jackie Robinson Day, and it's great, it's awesome. Everyone wears the number 32, and but he, without even hesitating, calls African Americans, well, he calls them Negroes, but back then that was the verbiage. They called them Negroes.
Yeah,
that was how they were known. Second class citizens, and like they didn't even bat an eye about it. Like that's how they were considered.
Well,
what does that do to your self esteem if you in that era are an African American?
Which is why this problem.
And what do you tell
so
your kids? What do you tell your kids? What do you tell your kids?
Yeah,
when it's global, nationally okay for a guy to come out and consider your race second class.
Well, I think G. Edward Griffin, when he's calling them Negro. I don't think
he said second-class citizens.
Well, no, he said the socialists view them as second-class citizens. I view his opinion, I don't think that he believes that at all.
No, he's exploiting, not exploiting, but he's bringing out the communists. But
he's reading from a lot of their texts.
But the racism back then, and it wasn't that long ago.
No, you're right.
Like, they couldn't, people would take... Jackie Robinson can't play baseball. He's fucking black.
Yeah.
And he fucking played better than anybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just the idea, and even sooner, like in the 80s when I grew up, what's his name from the Houston Oilers? Warren Moon was a badass quarterback, dude. But there was, in the 80s, pushback. Can we have a black quarterback?
Why
the fuck not?
It's so stupid now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Yeah.
But, it wasn't that long ago, but it just blows my mind.
Right.
But I do wonder what that does to your self-esteem.
Well, that's why I think this issue is complicated. Because, yes, I didn't own any slaves. You didn't own any slaves. So for somebody to say that you did something wrong to them, that's not right at all.
That was 100 years ago.
But on the opposite hand... You know, what does the average black person go through when they go, you know, what's going on in the average white person's head? Like, do they still mentally view us as inferior to them? And I would think that that's constantly a thing that's recurring inside of their head. And I don't blame them for that. You know, anytime, like I say, one of the worst things that happened in history was that slavery ever existed, that one human was ever subjugated to another. Well, I can say this. All of us
have been
whites,
enslaved.
Blacks, everybody right now we all are in the same boat. So let's not fight amongst each other. Let's learn how to get along with each other, and let's all love each other, and let's rise out of this.
Let's grab our paddle
right
and let's start rowing the same direction.
Yeah, let's go. Because part of the idea is divide and conquer. And when they can take a population and divide them appropriately, then they can conquer them. And that's what's been going on with a lot of this race war bullshit. It's bullshit. And when I see it on the news, Fox News are, oh, can you believe these black people doing this? And then Rachel Maddow's like, can you believe the rich people doing this? Can you believe all the different people doing all this different? Look, guys, it's not any, all the real people who are fucking you up are not being called out on the news. The real people that are fucking you up are only being called out on the Beacon podcast and similar shows.
Tom Woods is pretty good on that too.
Yeah, Tom Woods is doing good, but you got to watch out a little bit for the libertarian side of things. A lot of the libertarian side of things is also controlled. I'm not saying Tom Woods is. I'm not saying Ron Paul is, but the end.
Like, are you shocked that Ron Paul could actually be a candidate? Like, they even let that out there, like his,
little bit,
yeah,
little bit,
because
it, that's
the way
what concerns
the media,
me a bit.
The media will tell you all libertarians are nut jobs. They just want to drive drunk and smoke weed.
Yeah,
with their guns shooting out the air.
I know that's
Samsung.
What I want to do. Like every single day, I just want to drive drunk and smoke weed and shoot my gun out of my car.
Well, it wouldn't suck.
You don't want to do that. The only reason you don't want to do that is because you can't.
Just once.
It's like we always want the forbidden fruit. Like when you're a kid,
yeah,
you're always like, if your mom was like, don't touch the cookies in the cookie jar, the only thing you can ever think about when she's done with that statement is, I want a fucking cookie.
Yeah,
you know, like, and if she never said anything in the first place, that's I think that that's why the Ten Commandments were created, is that once you tell somebody you cannot do something, then it makes them go,
damn, I want to fuck my neighbor's wife.
I
want
to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it becomes an issue.
Yeah.
It's implanting a rift.
Yep. But that, I mean, that being said, I mean, that's why we always say freedom comes with responsibility. You know, of course, I would love to fucking rip a joint. Of course, I like to get a little drunk and I like to shoot guns, but I'm not going to go drive around doing it.
Do it responsible then.
Yeah, I will.
Good.
I'll wear my seatbelt. And but
hey, if you're in the desert alone with nobody at risk of being hurt, I don't see anything wrong with you smoking pot, driving a car, and shooting your gun out the window.
I'm a pretty good driver, dude. I could fucking snap a bong load, chug a beer.
You know, you might just endanger your own safety, but, you know, that's up to you. Then you are the one who has to bear your own consequences.
Exactly. Everything we say, we're responsible for.
As long as just don't hurt.
Whatever happened to accountability, you know?
Yeah.
But everyone's a victim now.
That's why the only way really to cure this whole thing is an ideological change. It really has to be an ideological change. And not the ideological change that the socialists choose to set up. I believe it's one of a freedom-minded, like, setup. You know what I mean? Because I couldn't think of a better word. Yeah. So if we all started thinking in terms of freedom, like, I've got to give that other person their due freedom. So now I'm constantly thinking about that. I'm like, okay, I can't impose on anybody else. All I can do that would be appropriate is to either not take from anybody else, or just for error's sake, I can give. So I choose to just give. So a lot of my life now is just like serving other people and like giving to other people. And like, you know, that's this podcast is an act of service, you know, to spend that much time. I could just learn this shit and just be content with this stuff myself, but that's not going to, it's not going to help. It's not going to do anything if it's not, consumed by the people, you know what I mean? By the masses.
And I'm sure there's a lot of other people with the same point of view. And you know, that's another thing is like, if when you listen to some podcasts or, you know, books on tape, whatever, you're like, wow, I think the same way as this person. And, sometimes you feel alone in your thoughts.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever your beliefs are. But when you get out there and find things like this, it's a good thing.
It's a good
and like,
thing.
So let's say, for example, like I look at communist countries now that exist now. Technology is frozen.
Yeah.
Where do they get all their technology from? Where do the advancements come from?
From
a free society.
Yeah.
Letting people be free and make work easier for themselves by inventing the next best thing.
Yeah. Well, there's no initiative. First of all,
there's
no
for the economy
initiative
as well.
In socialist societies to invent anything new. And second of all, there's only a small amount of their budget goes towards actually improving life, because the simple fact is the owners in a socialist society could care less about improving the lot of life for the average person. They make it sound, before the revolution, they make it sound like that's what they want. And then once the revolution happens, the dictatorship of the proletariat takes control, then it's clampdown time, and then boom. Nobody all of a sudden gives a fuck about science or improving your lot in life at all. It's just shut up and work, and if you get out of line, we'll make you a slave in this, or you'll be hurting in this. And the quality of life just never improves, because any advancement always, always only goes to benefit those in control. Mm-hmm. Then at that point.
I was talking to a guy at a bar a few weeks ago, just randomly. Well, it was more than a few weeks, but he's rooting for his Green Bay Packers. You know, we showed up, we're going to grab a couple drinks, and he was Cuban. He's American, but he was born in Cuba. And we started talking and this and that, and he was talking about how much he loves America, because when he was born in Cuba, it was a hard life. And his dad had to give him up and to let him come to America. Basically, he said he has to work in the sugar fields for the rest of his life for his son to become an American.
Yeah, that's socialism.
And that was the trade he was willing to give.
That's the path.
So his son can have a better life.
Yep.
Can you imagine that?
And
he knows he'll never see his son.
That's that, because there's America to escape to. Imagine if America falls. There will be nowhere to escape to for anybody. And once you have a world dictatorship, dude, we will literally, people will be living on crumbs. Crumbs. It's not going to be this world society like a Zeitgeist. You guys ever seen Zeitgeist? It'll never be that world communist society like in Zeitgeist, like it talks about with the Venus
Utopias,
Project.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, this utopia that all we're going to do at this point is just people won't have to work anymore because technology is going to do everything. And then all people will ever do is just go to school, and all we'll ever do is get smarter and smarter and smarter. It's going to be crazy. Yeah, right. What he's doing is classic communist persuasion. That is communist persuasion. And part of this, I actually have it loaded. It's right here.
What was that?
It's right here.
Let's imagine for a moment we had the option to redesign human civilization from the ground up.
Oh, I remember this.
So at the end of the podcast, I'm just going to play this 15-minute thing just so you guys see the modern version of the enticement into socialism and communism. That's it. Let me do this last part with Griffin talking about the question of African Americans.
Let's turn now to the record and see how the communists themselves explain it. Now, this communist booklet entitled American Negro Problems was published in 1928. It was written by John Pepper, alias Joseph Pogani. Now, Pogani was sent to this country as the personal envoy of Joseph Stalin, and his specific mission was to bring the American Communist Party into line with the policies and directives from Moscow, particularly with regard to the Negro question. And here is what Pogani said. The Communist Party of America, in its fight against imperialism, must recognize clearly the tremendous revolutionary possibilities of the liberation movement of the Negro people. It is the basic duty of the Communist Party to develop all revolutionary possibilities of the Negro race. The Black Belt in the South constitutes virtually a colony within the body of the United States of America. Self-determination means the right to establish their own state, to erect their own government if they choose to do so. The Communist Party of America must come out openly and unreservedly for the right of national self-determination for the Negroes. But it would be a major mistake to believe that there can be any other revolution in imperialist America than a proletarian revolution. Now let me repeat that last sentence, because it's the key to this entire presentation. It would be a major mistake to believe that there can be any other revolution in imperialist America than a proletarian revolution. Well, moving forward to the year 1935, we come to this communist booklet entitled The Negroes in a Soviet America, written by James Ford and James Allen. Beginning on page 24, the general strategy is laid out in rather graphic form. You see, there's a major heading here entitled The Negro and Revolution. Directly beneath this, there's a subheading entitled Two Revolutions in One. And then within this section, it says, The problem of Negro liberation has two aspects. We shall first consider each separately and then show how the solution for the first flows into the solution for the second. Now, the next subheading then is entitled The Rebellion of an Oppressed Nation. And the section that follows that describes the violent revolution that must be fought to liberate the Black Belt of the South. And then finally, over in the next page, there's another subheading entitled The Proletarian Revolution. And here we begin to get an idea finally of what this phase of the revolution is all about. It says, Capitalism is decaying. It is an outworn system. Capitalism is based upon the private ownership of machines, factories, railroads, land, and all other means of production. Only one thing can do away with the basis for the existence of capitalism, the expropriation of the capitalists. And by the way, I'm sure you realize that everyone here, by communist definition at least, is a capitalist. So you should feel good to know that there are those who are planning your expropriation someday. In order to expropriate the capitalists, the workers first need to discard the existing government machinery and to institute a working class government. Under this new workers' government, the building of socialism begins. Now, exactly what that's all about, the building of socialism, we'll get to in a moment. But finally, on page 28, under the third subheading entitled The Combination of Two Revolutions, the communists reveal how the two phases of their revolution are related to each other and which of the two is most important to them. Between the proletarian revolution and the revolution of the Negro people, there is a living link. This is the working class. Here reposes the leadership of the two aspects of the revolution. But the Negro communist is first and foremost the exponent of the proletarian revolution. Well, 1935 is a long time ago. And sometimes we hear it said that the communists have since abandoned this concept. But ladies and gentlemen, they cannot abandon it for the simple reason that if they did so, they'd be abandoning the classic dual form of revolution dictated by Marxism-Leninism. They'd cease to be communists. To justify violence, they have to be able to claim that they're liberating people. And if people are to be liberated, then it's necessary to go through the motions, at least, of pretending that they have a right to form a nation of their own. And so the communist position on the Negro question today is no different than it was back in 1928.
No different. Nope. So I think now this is a good time to talk about today. What's going on today? We have a president who, I mean, if you have any kind of a brain or a soul or anything, you at least have to have thought at some point, something's up. And if you haven't thought at least, hey, something doesn't sound right, something's up, then you just haven't been thinking. But if you've been listening to the Beacon podcast, then I know that you already know that. So, it's almost undeniable when you look at the way the government is headed and the things that your President Barack Hussein Obama, the things that he's saying, they are not capitalistic attributes. They are socialism in action. And we are going to document that with the following segment. So I think that the best way to start this off is to talk about Barack Hussein Obama's childhood. Actually, let me start it off with this. Now, the first reference that I'm getting this from is KeyWiki. That's K-E-Y-W-I-K-I. And it's their article on Barack Obama and the Communist Party. We'll start it off with this. And I'll be taking little clips from their article here because it's great. Barack Obama's involvement with the Communist Party USA. Communist leader on friend Barack Obama. On November 15th, 2008, Sam Webb, national chair of the Communist Party USA, delivered an address to the Communist Party USA National Committee. During his address, he noted the following concerning the party's relationship with Obama. The left can and should advance its own views and disagree with the Obama administration without being disagreeable. Its tone should be respectful. We are speaking to a friend. So now I think that we should kind of get into this figure that was a influential figure in Obama's childhood. And that was a man named Frank Marshall Davis. And this man has many, many, many ties with the Communist Party in the United States. And this is a mentor. This is a childhood mentor of Barack Obama, okay? This information is all out there. You can find this. Barack Obama's first known connection with a Communist Party USA supporter was his boyhood relationship with communist poet Frank Marshall Davis in Hawaii. Barack Obama's relationship to Frank Marshall Davis first came to light through a March 2007 speech at New York University's Tamamit Library by Communist Party USA supporter and historian Gerald Horn. And I'm going to read to you an excerpt of his of what he said. Eventually, he befriended another family, a Euro-American family that had migrated to Honolulu from Kansas, and a young woman from his family eventually had a child with a young student from Kenya, East Africa, who goes by the name of Barack Obama, who, retracing the steps of Davis, eventually decamped to Chicago. In his best-selling memoir, Dreams of My Father, the author speaks warmly of an older black poet he identifies simply as Frank, as being a decisive influence in helping him to find his present identity as an African-American, a people who have been the least anti-communist and the most left-leaning of any constituency in this nation. Least anti-communist. Least anti-communist. What does that mean? That's a double negative. That means communist. Least anti-communist means communist. Just so we get our double negs right. Double negative.
But isn't two negatives a positive?
Yes, exactly. Positively, yes. So Barack Obama was actually mentored by this man, Frank Marshall Davis, who had ties to communism. The FBI first began tracking Davis in 1944 when they identified him as a member of the Communist Party's Dory Miller Club in Chicago, and his card number, he has an FBI or a Communist Party card number, and his Communist Party card number is 47544, if you guys want to go check it out. Frank Marshall Davis had his Hawaii activism. He moved to Hawaii, attended the Lincoln School that was run by the Communist Party of the United States, and an extensive Senate security investigation in 1956 shattered that Hawaiian Communist Party, and it drove the remnants completely underground. So Frank Marshall Davis went completely underground. By the way, Barack Obama mentions Frank Marshall Davis 22 times in his book, Tales of My Father, and he refers to him as simply as Frank. He never says Frank's last name. He only says Frank. The whole book.
Whoa.
You're never introduced to who Frank is, but Frank had such an impact. Barack Obama wrote a ton of his book about Frank, and it's Frank Marshall Davis. Now, there is a conspiracy theory out there, and I think it's worth entertaining just to put it out there, that Frank Marshall Davis is actually Barack's dad.
Not his biological father, but his the guy who raised
him? No, his biological father.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought he was named after his biological father.
Well, I haven't done the research on that,
mm-hmm.
but there is some interesting information out there. I just I didn't compile the research on that. If you guys want to go out there and look at that, that's up to you. But in no way does that deter from our whole what we're doing here in proving that Obama is a communist. So we're just going to continue. Excuse me. I'm allergic to communism.
Are you on the wiki?
I'm on the wiki right now. But I'm skipping around.
Yeah, because I love that they have this page on President Obama's communist agenda, and it basically lists all of the communist agenda, like, and everything that he's done step by step.
Oh no, that's Diane Vance.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm going to get into that.
So I'm ahead. I'm
on the Key Wiki one.
But that one, holy shit, it's blowing my fucking mind, man.
Yeah, we'll get to there.
So I wanted to like the guy, you know.
I know.
Damn it.
No, it's we all do. So as late as 1973, Frank Marshall Davis was still listed as an endorser of a major Communist Party USA front organization, the American Committee for Protection of Foreign Born. All these things sound so nice that they're involved in. It's like you name something nice and then it can't be bad, you know?
He kind of does look like Frank Marshall Davis.
I kind of does. I kind of agree with you.
But you
okay,
never.
So I'll keep reading more on Frank Marshall Davis. In an article by Tony Harnden, published by the Telegraph on August 22nd, 2008, communist Frank Marshall Davis's influence on the young Barack Obama was uncovered. Maya Sotero NG, who is Barack Obama's half sister, told the Associated Press that her grandfather had seen Davis as a point of connection, a bridge, if you will, to the larger African-American experience for my brother, Barack Obama. And Don Weatherly Williams, a close friend of Frank Marshall Davis, stated that Obama's maternal grandfather, Stanley Dunham, and Davis were close friends, adding that they would spend evenings together playing Scrabble, drinking, cracking jokes, and smoking marijuana. She said that Davis was first introduced to Obama in 1970 at the age of 10. And, quote-unquote, Stan had been promising to bring Barry by because we had all had that in common. Frank's kids were half white. Stan's grandson was half black, and my son was half black. We all had that in common, and we really enjoyed it. We got a real kick out of reality. Okay, we're going to move from Frank Marshall Davis and his communist connections. We're going to move to Addy Wyatt, Obama's connection with Addy Wyatt. In a letter that was read at Addy Wyatt's funeral in April of 2004, Addy Wyatt was a longtime affiliate of the Chicago Communist Party in the United States. In a letter read at her funeral in April 2004 from President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, Wyatt was called a champion of equality and a fierce advocate for working Americans. Wyatt's home was used to carry out meetings with public figures such as Reverend Jesse Jackson, President Barack Obama, and U.S. Republican Bobby Rush. There's another affiliation to communism. Here's another. Barack Obama and someone called Vernon Jarrett. Vernon Jarrett was a prominent Chicago journalist and was a family friend and later father-in-law of Barack Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett. In the 1940s, Jarrett worked in several communist-influenced organizations in Chicago, including serving on the publicity committee of the communist-controlled Packing House Workers Strike Committee with Frank Marshall Davis. He also ran a radio show with the Communist Party USA member Oscar Brown Jr. In 1992, Obama worked for the Acorn offshoot Project Vote. And this Project Vote registered black voters in aid of the Senate campaign of somebody called Carol Moseley Braun, who had strong Communist Party USA ties and was Harold Washington's legislative floor leader. Okay, and in that, Vernon Jarrett writes in the Chicago Sun-Times on August 11th, 1992. He says, "Good news, good news. Project Vote, a collectivity of 10 church-based community organizations dedicated to black voter registration, is off and running. Project Vote is increasing its rolls at a 7,000 per week clip. If Project Vote is to reach its goal of registering 150,000 out of an estimated 400,000 unregistered blacks statewide, it must average 10,000 rather than 7,000 every week," says Barack Obama, the program's executive director. And then this article goes on to describe so many different Communist Party organizations that came out publicly in support of Barack Obama in his 2004 Senate race, and his presidential race. And when he actually won the presidency, these communist organizations came out publicly and were just giving him massive accolades. I'm talking massive accolades. The supporters in his 2008 presidential candidacy, communist supporters, the Communist Party USA and the Young Communist League USA, put in a huge effort to elect Barack Obama in 2008. Individual party members who actively propagandized for Barack Obama or worked on the ground to get him elected include, and there's a list probably of 30 people here, and you can look it up on that website that I gave you earlier if you're interested. That is KeyWiki, Barack Obama, and the Communist Party. But we have to keep moving on because we have a lot to cover. So that's as far as KeyWiki is concerned. Now, what we're going to do next is kind of get into a little bit of what when Obama was crawling up out of the socialist communist sewer into public life. The first thing that I think would be beneficial to talk about is a woman named Alice Palmer. She had a Senate seat in Illinois Senate. And she basically relinquished her seat to Barack Obama. But she went around promoting him to all of her friends. She had massive communist affiliations all over the world. She was, all you have to look is Alice Palmer, communism, and you will find all of her ties to communism. She is definitely a communist. She was taking Barack Obama around and promoting him. She took him to a apartment where he basically, they say it jump-started his career. It was the apartment of a man named Bill Ayers and his wife, Bernadine Dorn, okay? And these two people were influential players in a terrorist organization called the Weather Underground, all right? Now, before I continue with the Weather Underground, I think that I should just play a clip. I should have played this earlier, but let me just play this clip to just kind of set the mood here.
Right on.
It may surprise you to learn that I was host to Mr. Khrushchev for a half day when he visited the United States as a state visitor. But according to President Eisenhower, Khrushchev had expressed a desire to learn something of American agriculture. And after seeing Russian agriculture, I can understand why. As we talked face to face, he indicated that my grandchildren would live under communism. After assuring him that I expected to do all in my power to assure that his and all other grandchildren will live under freedom, he arrogantly declared in substance, "You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright. But we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you finally wake up and find you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll so weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands.
And there are a couple ways to weaken an economy. There is one, to allow the Federal Reserve to keep printing money, causing inflation, increasing the money supply, which is actually a hidden tax on the people. And if you don't know a lot about economics or just how money works, check out our podcast called Monopoly Money.
Federal Reserve Notes.
It dives into all of that. But the long and short of it is this. Your dollar is a piece of paper. It's printed by a private company, and that private company is basically a mouthpiece for the secret societies that have a socialist agenda to enslave you. And what it is an instrument of debt. So every time you spend it, basically it's taking an IOU written on a napkin and giving it to somebody else. Okay, now you owe them. Now you owe them. Now you owe them. It's an IOU. And what they keep doing is the government keeps borrowing money from the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve keeps printing more and more IOUs. That's one way. And then another way to economically take over a country is to take from the people that produce, to actually rob their money, take their money by force, and give it to the poor. The poor that,
like Robin Hood,
that haven't earned it. Like Robin Hood. But when I say take by force, it is by force.
And you have no choice but to pay these taxes.
Because what if you don't?
You'll be either imprisoned,
yep,
or your business will be shut down.
That's by force.
Yeah.
It is a bully clenching his fist and going, give me your lunch money. And you give it to him. Now, did he beat you up? No. But he intimidated you out of your money. So, it's the same thing. Now, Barack Obama's doing the same thing. Here's him, the famous quote of him talking to, remember that plumber? And Obama
Joe the plumber?
Says,
Joe the plumber?
I think it's better or to distribute the
Or is that Sarah Palin's
Yeah,
homie.
No, Joe the plumber. You're right.
Barack Obama, yesterday, I believe, take a listen to this crosstalk.
Your new tax plan is going to tax me more, isn't it?
It's not that I want to punish your success. I just want to make sure that everybody who is behind you, that they've got a chance at success, too. I think when you spread the wealth around, it's good for everybody.
Okay, here's how you fucking get a chance at success. Are you ready for this?
Go for it.
Are you ready for your chance at success? Anybody who fucking feels like you're behind the plumber guy?
Yeah.
That guy digs through shit. He fucking has a hard fucking job. You're damn right he deserves a fucking profit.
And
how about this? How about this?
You deserve it by sitting on your couch smoking weed.
Do you want to know how you get yours? Do you want to know? Get a fucking job and fucking work your ass off.
Yep.
You will be that guy.
Yep. No.
Earn your fucking keep, everybody.
Exactly.
Jesus fucking Christ. It's not that fucking hard.
Nope. So
it's the American fucking dream. Get a fucking job. Work. You know what? Sometimes companies fail. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. But you know what? If you're willing to work, if you're willing to fucking try hard, you could be something.
Yep.
Just fucking try.
For sure.
Dig a fucking ditch. There's nothing wrong with it.
This is like the last cry of individuals crying out saying, come on, we can do this, people. Come on. And I feel Nick's emotions. I can feel it from across the studio. But I really can. He's saying... Because he knows. And are you
Because I've been
there,
busting my ass ever since I could get a fucking work permit, dude.
But what it is people are indoctrinated into believing this and into being lazy. Part of it is laziness.
Yeah, yeah.
They are lazy, too. But it is a whole ideology. It's a whole system that's inculcated into people. This is the most successful propaganda system. This dwarfs the German Nazi propaganda system. This is why it takes us multiple shows on this podcast to actually outline how this thing is formed so that people can actually start seeing it and envisioning how it is encompassing them.
And you know what? I'm going to use, a stupid quote, but it's not a stupid quote, but overly used, but like Martin Luther King had a fucking dream. There's nothing wrong with that. If everyone has a dream. But the thing is, I think the communist agenda wants to strip your dream away from you and put you where you're gonna, wherever you gotta be. Right. You know, if you're gonna be a lever puller and a knob fucking pusher, that's all you're gonna fucking be.
Yeah.
But if you have a fucking dream, there's nothing wrong with fucking chasing that dream. And you know what? You are gonna fail. You're gonna trip and you're gonna fucking hit the dirt, but you gotta fucking wipe yourself off and keep trying.
No, the communist dream is this too, is eventually you'll see this. Dream too much at night? Take
a pill.
Take dream be gone. And we can send you to sleep your whole life, and you will never even, you'll wake up in the morning, not have any dreams, and just be ready to go for work the next day. How's that feel? They'll have some sexy chick on the commercial. She'll be smiling at you, and that's just going to propagandize you. Even you'll be like, I want to feel like that someday. No. The truth of the matter is, what makes us human is our dreams, our suffering, our pain, our struggles, our emotions, our elation when things go really well. Don't let them take our souls away from us. You know what I mean? And it's happening. Don't let that happen.
Definitely. People just feel like they can't move on. They're stuck on the fucking couch. They can't get jobs.
And once somebody state-funded assistance, when somebody admits defeat, I believe part of their soul just died.
Yeah, it's victim mentality.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you fucking are working and you're having a hard time, you know, like say, you know, they're making a big deal about raising the minimum wage. And I think as long as inflation's going up, it's going to happen anyway. There's always going to be a minimum wage. And it's not going to make your life better if it's raised a little bit. Work fucking harder to get to the next spot, to follow your dream, to get where you got to be.
Now imagine if you had a business and then you're like, okay, I'm just starting off. I have to pay my nephew $3 an hour. He agreed to it. He's 18. He just turned 18. He's good to go. He agreed to it. I need the help. I'm employing him a couple hours just to stack some wood. He's cool with it. That's all I can afford. Nope. The government comes in and goes, child labor laws. You can't do it, and you must pay him this much. And it's driving small business out of business. It's driving them out of business. A lot of people go, minimum wage, what could possibly be wrong with that? People should be paid a lot. No, not by the government should never tell a private company what they should do. That's private business. The government should not get involved in private business unless there is a wrong being done. If somebody is forcing somebody to work for them and paying them a low wage, as in China, then it's wrong. But if it's a voluntary thing, then
I choose to work for $2 an hour.
There's nobody being forced. They voluntarily entered into that agreement because they wanted to. They wanted to make $3 an hour. Who's the government to go and fuck with that? That's a contract. Contracts are sacred. Contracts between two people rise above this level of reality. That rises above all levels of reality. That's two people promising one thing. Marriage is a sacred contract. You know?
Yeah.
So let me put one other clip and then
I just don't think welfare, it's obviously not helping. Is there less people on welfare since the fucking 30s? Or is there more?
Obviously, there's not.
So there's more. So that's obviously not working. It's generational. It's like generations on fucking welfare, dude.
It just as a small experiment.
And to be honest with you, I'm not against, you know, helping people, okay? But like you said, it'd be better in a, say, like, if you call it a libertarian society where it's volunteer, this guy's on hard, you know, fell in hard times.
Charity.
It's charity, you know. But as far as welfare goes, you know, we pay our taxes and it goes to that, but I wish it was just a temporary basis. Like, look, hey, here's 6 months at the most,
you wouldn't to get even you back have on your to feet. Worry about that in a voluntary society.
Yeah,
a voluntary society.
But you shouldn't go your whole fucking life on it, because guess what? You're okay eating fucking government cheese.
Yeah, but Nick, too, we also have to understand that a large part of the problem is that people have been given money for how many years now? How long has the welfare state existed? 50 years? For as long as that's happened, as big as it's gotten now, we've enabled this to happen. And now there's a whole section of the country that is dependent.
Yeah.
And they have no skills. They have zero skills. All they
No drive.
All they got is their mouth.
It's not helping. It's not giving you any motivation at all.
Right.
And I guarantee you, there's people with ideas out there that are on welfare and that have talents, but they don't access that part of their brain because they're okay just getting those fucking crackers and
the
government cheese.
My contention is this. If we would have never enacted a welfare state to begin with, you wouldn't have had that big of a faction of suckerfish. They're suckerfish.
Yeah.
Right? So they wouldn't have never had this many suckerfish if you wouldn't have started feeding them in the first place. Now, this problem is difficult to cure because you're going to have to start weaning the suckerfish off of your back. And they're used to the algae off
parasites.
Of your back. You know what I mean?
Parasites. It's a parasite.
And that becomes a very, very difficult process. One that's outside of the scope of this particular show. But let's take a break and we'll get back into it. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you so much. The Beacon Podcast, the only place that you're going to get the rough, raw truth.
Coming at you.
Let's, Nick, preface this song, Son of a Bush.
Oh, Public Enemy. I think Chuck D is one of the best rap voices in hip-hop rap history, man. This dude is the shit.
But we are also saying that this is also... This agenda...
Communist agenda, yes.
...is not just a Democrat agenda, or not just a Republican agenda, that this supersedes all left and right paradigms, that this has been ongoing for the...
And we're trashing Obama on this show in a way. You know, we're getting the dirt on him.
Mm-hmm.
But he has predecessors.
Yeah, and these people all...
And they're all buddies. And they all want to act like...
Different,
the left
like
or right. Yeah,
or whatever.
If you agree with this guy, you can't be cool with this guy. But it's all a fucking lie.
But ladies and gentlemen, the absolute truth is this. That baby Bush was the son of a bad man.
Went for Delph, knee deep in his damn self. Stuck in a three-headed bucket, a trilateral bullshit. Sorry, ain't no better way of putting it. No, you cannot freestyle this, cause your ass still ain't free. If I fight for y'all and they get me,
come on.
How many y'all is coming to get me? None, cause it's easier to forget me. Ain't that a Bush? Son of a Bush is here all up in your zone. You ain't never heard so much soul to the bone, I told y'all when the first Bush was tapping my telephone. Spy versus spy, can't trust them as you salute to the Illuminati. You know what? Take your ass to your 1 million party. Go on! He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad
man. He's the son of a bad
man. The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
genocide, certified genocide. Ain't that a push? Repeat, ain't that a push? Out of nowhere, headed to the hothouse, killed 135 at the last count. Texas bounce, come on. Cats in a cage, got a ghost of a chance of coming back from your whack. Ass killer machine, son of a bush, ain't that a son of a bush? Cats doing bids for the same bullshit that you did. Serial killer kid, serial killer kid, go!
He's the son of a bad,
he's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad,
he's the son of a bad,
the son and
of a bad man. He's the son of a bad man.
If you will study the history of Skull and Bones, the secret society that both Papa and Junior Bush belong to, you'll find out they were both bad men. Not to mention their grandfather, Prescott Bush, who was a major player in funding and arming both sides of the World War II, the Nazi War. They armed both fucking sides. So, they are not your friends, they're not Americans, they're traitors, and those that are alive should be hung, as far as I'm concerned.
For treason.
For treason, fuck yeah. So, we're continuing on. So, we're getting into Barack Obama and his history into socialist and communist integrated parties. Let's just hear it from Obama's own mouth. He is his microphone was left on at a conference when he's speaking to a representative from Moscow, Dmitry Medvedev. And if it's tough to hear it, I'll talk to you about what he says afterwards, and then we'll play it again.
My last election, yeah. And after my election, I have more flexibility. Yeah.
I understand. I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
It's
there's a lot
tough
of flashes going off in there.
But what he says is, Obama says, after my next election, I'll have more flexibility. He's saying this to Dmitry Medvedev. And then Medvedev says, I'll transmit this information to Vladimir. Okay, I'll play it again.
My last election. After my election, I have more flexibility.
Yeah. I understand. I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
One more time.
My last election. Yeah. After my election, I have more flexibility.
Yeah. I understand. I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
I'll transmit this information to Vladimir. Who are they talking? Who's Vladimir? Who are they talking about? That's Putin, ladies and gentlemen. That's the leader.
Putin.
All right, so
the guy without shirts on horses.
Exactly. So let's get into this.
Which is funny because they pretend like they hate each other. Like, oh, the news always say that's so awkward. They don't talk. They're sitting there quietly.
Exactly, exactly. So what I think that would be good to get into this weather underground. This weather underground, or yeah, we're about there. So Barack Obama was introduced by Alice Palmer into this apartment in Hyde Park. And that was the apartment of Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. And they were members, influential members of this group called the Weather Underground, which was a terrorist organization which carried out terrorist acts in America in order to foment a social revolution. Now, he was introduced, his career got started and was introduced in their apartment, okay? Now, this man named Larry Grathwall, which I had this clip loaded, and I don't have it loaded now. I'm so pissed off because this clip is like, it's awesome. It tells it. Larry Grathwall is basically saying, I was in a room with all of these people from the Weather Underground. By the way, Larry Grathwall was an FBI undercover agent that was able to infiltrate this Weather Underground group. and he attended a meeting where 25 people are talking about how they're going to actually seriously overthrow the country through all these different means, violent means. And he's able to actually – he actually says, what are you guys going to do once you get charge of you know, hundreds of millions of people? And they basically told him that at least 25 million off the – or 100 million off the cuff are going to have to go to re-education centers. 100 million off the cuff have to get re-educated. And of those, he said, what of those that you just can't re-educate? And they said
– slaughter them.
They said 25 million of them have to be – will just have to be executed. Just statistics. This is real shit we're talking about here, guys. This isn't – this is real shit. Look it up. Larry Grathwall. That's Larry, L-A-R-R-Y. Grathwall is G-R-A-T-H-W-O-H-L. Okay? Look it up, please. Now, the Weather Underground is an interesting organization.
Dude, I have that fucking app on my phone, dude.
Yeah, it's not that.
Okay, good.
That's a different
one. I was going to feel like a douchebag, dude.
No, it's different. So, the Weather Underground was a faction of the SDS. And the SDS is Students for a Democratic Society. Their goal was to overthrow the United States. Okay? And the SDS... I'm going to trace their history back. This is actually my own research right here, okay? I'm going to trace the Students for a Democratic Society. I'm going to trace their history back, okay? They came from something called the SLID, which is the Students League for Industrial Democracy, which was the youth branch of the LID, the League for Industrial Democracy. And that descended from the Intercollegiate Socialist Society. Now, that Intercollegiate Socialist Society is a student wing for the Socialist Party of America. So, the Weather Underground is, through steps, a branch, a twig off of the tree of the Socialist Party of America. Okay? And Barack Obama got his career started in the apartment of two very influential members of that, which I think is also an interesting connection. Barack Obama's first fundraiser. Oh, yeah. Sorry, that was his first fundraiser. Another thing that's interesting is we talked about that apartment was Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn's apartment. Well, Michelle Obama and Bernadine Dorn both worked at the same law office when Michelle Obama was a practicing lawyer. Interesting. So another thing that, since we're talking about that SDS, the Students for a Democratic Society, one of the organizations that Students for a Democratic Society founded was... Okay, now actually pay attention, because this one you're actually really going to want to hear. They founded the Vence Ramos Brigade. Okay, the Vence Ramos Brigade was founded by the students of Democratic Society and officials from the Republic of Cuba. And the whole idea was, after the embargo on Cuba, was to help free traffic up to Cuba, to kind of basically riot and boycott the embargo to Cuba. The reason there was an embargo to Cuba is because Cuba had a socialist revolution, and there was a coup that happened, and a socialist dictator, Fidel Castro, came out of that. Now, that dictator was not recognized by any of the capitalist world. Not recognized, and any of the trade to them and from them was not recognized by us. So, we set up a what was called an embargo, okay, where we weren't doing trade with them. Now, Barack Obama just recently lifted that embargo, which is very, very weird, considering that part of the premise of this Vince Ramos Brigade was to... Oh, and by the way, many people from this Vince Ramos Brigade went into the Weather Underground. And the idea of this Vince Ramos Brigade was to open up Cuba back again in its socialist form. Now, Obama has opened up Cuba. It's still socialist. It's still owned by the people who, by force, overthrew and took over Cuba. And now he does this.
I've instructed Secretary Kerry to immediately begin discussions with Cuba to reestablish diplomatic relations that have been severed since January of 1961. Going forward, the United States will reestablish an embassy in Havana, and high-ranking officials will visit Cuba. After all, these 50 years have shown that isolation has not worked. It's time for a new approach. Second, I've instructed Secretary Kerry to review Cuba's designation as a state sponsor of terrorism. This review will be guided by the facts and the law. Terrorism has changed in the last several decades. At a time when we are focused on threats from Al-Qaeda to ISIL, a nation that meets our conditions and renounces the use of terrorism should not face this sanction. Third, we are taking steps to increase travel, commerce, and the flow of information to and from Cuba. This is fundamentally about freedom and openness, and also expresses my belief in the power of people-to-people engagement. With the changes I'm announcing today, it will be easier for Americans to travel to Cuba, and Americans will be able to use American credit and debit cards on the island. In the most significant changes in our policy in more than 50 years, we will end an outdated approach that for decades has failed to advance our interests, and instead, we will begin to normalize relations between our two countries. Through these changes, we intend to create more opportunities for the American and Cuban people and begin a new chapter among the nations of the Americas. While I've been prepared to take additional steps for some time, a major obstacle stood in our way: the wrongful imprisonment in Cuba of a U.S. citizen and USAID subcontractor.
So anyways, he keeps going on about why he did it, but...
Over many months, my administration has held discussions with the Cuban government about Allen's case.
Yeah, the gist is...
aspects of our relationship.
He tries justifying it because it's because of terrorists and all this stuff,
but... personal appeal to me and to
we're
going to
shut
president.
Him off.
Yeah, because
we already know what you're all about now. Barack. That's not even your real name.
Hey, Barry.
His name's Barry Sotero.
But, I mean, I do, like, we talked about the people of Cuba earlier in the show, and I do wish them more freedoms, but I don't feel like this is helping them. Mm-hmm. I hope it will help them. I mean, well, otherwise, what if life's so fucking, this is what I don't understand
about.
Opening
up free trade to a socialist country never helps the people, it always helps the rulers, because the rulers still subjugate the people to what they want. The mm-hmm. people never see the results.
They don't get the profits. They don't, yeah.
The media says, open it up. Oh, now it's all open. Now it's all free. Now they're just, oh, they're going to be enlightened. It's going to be great. Just like Russia's enlightened now, right? No. Russia's got two societies. They've got the society that happens in Russia, and then they've got the society that they project to the outside world through like RT and those kind of media outlets. They're not free. By any means. China is not free by any means.
No.
If you try to look up Tiananmen Square on Chinese Google, it will yield zero results. You won't get anything. They've absolutely washed it from the record in China.
It's fucking insane, man.
It's technology.
But we're heading that way with... They want to censor the internet now.
I'm telling you, man.
We are in the fucking brink of that shit.
Everybody, take the wipers off your eyes because this shit's
we cannot let them
down.
Censor the internet at all. Yep. And if you're offended by certain words or what people say, You don't have that right. You can shut it off and say, I will not listen to that fucking person anymore.
But don't force other people to subscribe to your ideology.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So basically, I'm going to end it. I'm going to start closing it off with this.
I'm sorry, dude. I know you didn't want to go. What the fuck do we do as a society? I mean, we got the Bushes, we got the Clintons, and now the Obamas, who are all communists, have a communist fucking agenda.
Yeah, this has been going on a long time.
Dude.
Truman was a communist. FDR was a communist. Woodrow Wilson was a communist. We've had communists in office
for
a long time.
Does the American people or people of the world come back and live in a free society? How do we get freedom back for us?
The first step is education. The second step is realization. You have to realize who you are and the power that you have just being part of a society that has guns. The fact that we are 300 million people that have the ability to defend our beliefs. We can actually stand in unison and go, nope, we're not putting up with this anymore. You're fired. And you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm not asking
I will not vote for you. You
I'm
do not,
not
have my
revolution.
Fucking vote.
I'm saying non-participation in the system anymore. Grow your own garden. Barter with your friends. Trade in gold and silver. Don't use the dollar anymore. Start finding ways out, pluck yourself out of this, what I call Babylon, the Babylon system.
I wish
pluck
we could just say,
out.
I'm not paying taxes. Fuck you.
I don't want to advocate that because you can actually get arrested for that.
Well,
but
I know,
without advocating it,
okay, with stop
that
sign
is the goal.
Signals. We used to have cameras at stoplights that would take your fucking picture and then they'd give you your ticket in the mail. Guess what? That failed because people refused to pay the fucking tickets.
Right. Yeah. Well, we do.
That's
we,
a
sm- we
that's
hold
very
the power.
Small. That's very that's, fucking
no,
small.
No, but here's
but,
the
I mean,
thing.
That's.
We hold
go
the
bigger
power.
Than that.
We
yes.
hold the power. We have the reins. We are in charge.
It's just so fucking frustrating, man.
I hate that whole attitude of. Let's wait to see what they do. They are going to do this to us. No, let's start acting, guys. Come on, we got this. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you want more information on how scandalous your president is, I recommend a YouTube series. Look up The Vetting. That is V-E-T-T-I-N-G. The Vetting. Obama, Radical Islam, and the Soros Connection. I think there's 8 or 9 videos. Look them up, listen to them all, and research the information in all of those. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Oh, another thing, since we were talking about psychopolitics, right? How they were going to start tying your right to own guns with mental health. Remember that?
Yeah.
What? That was only a couple shows back, 2 or 3
yeah,
shows
and the,
back.
Yeah, it's so easy for them to just call you crazy.
Check out what I found. This is... one of Obama's new top doctors that he I don't know his exact position, but actually, Nick, do you mind talking for a second? I have to look this up real quick.
So you have one of Obama's top doctors talking about mental health in America.
Yes.
And one thing we talked about in one of our last shows about psychopolitics was that in order for them to take the weapons, they're going to consider you crazy. And I thought that it's kind of a coincidence that everyone seems to have some type of disorder now. Kids can't eat fucking peanut butter now. Everyone needs to have their fucking dog with them to go on the airplane because they need that help. Like, we're so fucking weak. What the hell happened to America, fucking land of the home of the free and land of the brave, you know?
Yep.
We were fucking brave at one right, point. Now yeah. we're all, we need a fucking puppy on our airplane because we don't have the, you know, we need their fucking,
all
we're
right,
so scared.
I found out what I was looking for. Guys, his official title, he is the new Surgeon General of the United States.
The guy who puts the shit on the cigarettes. Right?
This is the Surgeon General.
Hey,
this
pregnant
is the
ladies,
guy
you shouldn't smoke.
This is the guy that the government deems as the health expert, and what this guy says, is, according to health, is true. This is what he says about guns.
America has a new top doctor, the Senate confirming this guy, Dr. Vivek Murthy. He is the next Surgeon General of the United States despite opposition. His nomination's been held up for more than a year now after the NRA publicized tweets like this. Tired of politicians playing politics with guns, putting lives at risk because they're scared of NRA. Guns, a healthcare issue. Republicans also oppose his support for Obamacare.
This guy is tying gun ownership with mental stability. And he's actually come out saying
crazy that, people buy guns.
No, he's saying that only sane people who the state says is sane are allowed to have guns. He says guns are a mental health issue. And yet, yeah, guys, go back to bed. There's no psychopolitics going on, and there is no psychological warfare going on. Just give up your guns, you know?
So should schizophrenics have guns?
If you've had a DUI in the past, or you've been violent in the past, or you smoke weed, or whatever, then you don't have the right to own guns anymore. Or you have anxiety, or you have a little bit of social skill problems, or whatever. Whatever the state views as an excuse to take your guns away, why don't you just go back to bed and give up your guns? Because you know what? Your brain's just done. And you know what? It's time to be done thinking anyways, because the state can think for you. Meanwhile, there's the troopers, there's us out there that are actually trying to fight for freedom that are going to go, no, you don't have the right to take anybody's self-defense away from them, ever. It's unalienable right. That's what it says.
And not only that, but they're trying to make bulletproof vests illegal.
Yeah, they're
okay,
trying to make...
So what if I wanted to give up all
my... Type 3 bulletproof vests.
What if I wanted to give up my fucking weapons and say, yeah, here you go. Here you go, state. But I would like to protect myself against the criminals who have the guns.
You can't
do that. Walk around like 50 Cent with my fucking...
You cannot do that, Nick. You cannot do that.
That doesn't make sense at all.
Because it's socialism. When you've got top-controlled ideology, nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense. You need a government that is built from the ground up, which is a free market society, that is a voluntary society that is just built, that just happens. That's what you need. I mean, that's the best way to do it.
Well, this fucking show is pissing me off, goddammit, I gotta tell you.
Good! It should piss everybody off. We should all get pissed off. At least pissed off enough to act.
Well, not only that, but okay. I don't want to live under fucking socialist regime. I don't want to be in a communist country. I want to be in a free fucking country, alright? And this goes back to the Cubans. Like, it doesn't make sense to me that people still fucking breed and have kids when they know that their fucking child's life is gonna fucking suck. I don't want to have kids because I don't want to raise them in a fucking shit society.
Sometimes the impetus of sex is just enough to cause kids.
Well,
right?
Fucking's great, but you can shoot it on the tits, dude.
Well, sometimes that even causes pregnancy. Your pre ejaculation can cause pregnancy.
I understand, but like there's rubbers, there's other ways of.
Well, also on top of that, sometimes there is.
But
isn't that
not
breeding.
A sad fucking thought though? That like you just can't breed because
but
you know
in a completely socialist society there will be state mandated breeding. Also, it'll be fully controlled by the state. Who's allowed to breed? Who's not allowed to breed? It's a whole other subject called eugenics.
I'm just saying, okay, as a normal human being, like let's say you were a Cuban that you live in Cuba and you fucking didn't, you know, like the story I had earlier where the guy gave up his son to go to America, but he had to work in a sugar farm for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
He was a slave for the rest of his life. Right. If you knew that happens in your society, would you want to breed? Or if you lived in fucking Haiti or...
Yeah, but here's the thing, Nick. You're thinking with a free mind. They, in a socialist society, you don't even think the same way. Your soul
no, but
has
even
been
in a
robbed
fucking-
from you. You don't even think the same. You just go, God, they keep you in a state of deprivation to where you're just saying, God, I hope I can create enough stuff. And they intimidate your ass. They harass your ass. It's not free. You live in a state of intimidation. A lot of people think, socialism, as long as I'm doing my job, I'll be cool. That's not how it works. They're constantly on your ass, intimidating your ass, threatening you. If you don't do a certain quota of whatever, you're fired. Your family's done. You're constantly living under stress. It's slavery. And this new form, once there's a world government, the slavery is going to be insane. It's going to be absolutely psychological hell.
I'll never understand people. That's all I guess. I mean, there's parts of Africa where for generations they've been starving. We have to fucking ship food to them.
Well, that's one of the things I want
to
talk
about. But they think
it's
okay to have... It's like, if I, you know... I'm not saying I grew up really bad, but we weren't like rich or anything.
But you were free.
Yeah, but we were... Okay.
You believe,
but if you know that your child is going to grow up fucking starving and diseased, why the fuck would you have a kid?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, sometimes, like I said, sometimes it's mandated.
And I know fucking is a natural thing. It's like, it's great. Don't get me wrong.
Sometimes the state in socialist societies mandates that the most, the best genetic specimens fuck. They basically are in a laboratory, and the state says, you're the best genetic specimen. That's who we want to keep going. We want you to fuck. You're going to fuck her, and they assign it. Or sometimes they'll just say ejaculate, and they'll do – now you have the ability to just do Petri dish babies.
Turkey-based.
But at this level now, it's eugenics. Eugenics is a term that kind of morphed off of Charles Darwin's ideology – where you can evolve into better and better and eventually evolve into perfection. So a lot of these people are Darwinists, where they believe that they can if they breed just the most successful of the best, they'll get a breed of just the best, like Hitler was trying to do. Like, it was the exact same idea. What Hitler was before his time. What we're getting into now is what the mystery schools were trying to do with Hitler. And you look at Hitler and his background, and he was mystery school. He belonged to the Thule Society. He belonged to the Ordo Templi Orientis. He belonged to these secret societies that inculcated these beliefs into their individuals, and he was their guy. For a second there, he was the guy to be able to spread this ideology. Now, for some reason, it didn't work with him. But that ideology is not dead. That is the secret society ideology. And it is alive and well. It's very racist. It's Anglo-Saxon oriented. It's eugenic in nature. It's socialistic in nature. It's coming for us. And the Beacon Podcast is going to illustrate it. We're going to document it. We're going to prove it to be true, at least until I'm done breathing. Nick, what else you got, buddy?
So I want to say thank you all for downloading this podcast. We appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed it. If you have any ideas or information for us to look up, hit us up on Twitter. I think Twitter is the best way to get a hold of us.
Yeah. Right now.
At the beginning. I mean, I hit up Twitter more than anything.
I'm working through the Facebook thing still.
I'm just going to say Twitter. Okay. But you can email us as well.
For sure.
At the Beacon Podcast at Gmail.
Hit us on Facebook too if you want to.
Yeah, Facebook is good, but I never go on the Facebook page as often as you probably do. And Twitter is just quicker, easier.
Ever do, but
bam, podcast. I mean, not podcast. On the phone, bang, Twitter, I hit it up.
Yeah.
So hit us up at Twitter, at the Beacon Podcast. And
excuse me if I could interject. Yeah. Twitter is without the. Twitter is at Beacon Podcast.
At Beacon Podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate it. We've been getting some great feedback from listeners and followers on Twitter. And I mean, hey, I wouldn't mind having some fucking kids, but society's it's too fucking scary, man. I don't want to have kids in a fucked up society, man.
Well, that's
to be
another
honest.
Agenda of theirs is to destroy the family unit. And they're doing a good job because I don't want to have kids either. And
it's too fucking scary, bro.
People with good ideologies aren't going to have kids, so they won't share this information with anybody. So in a generation from us, who's going to know what's truth if we don't have kids or people don't listen to a podcast like this? Who's going to spread truth after this? How does truth survive?
And we're very lucky to live in this time frame with so much information out there, like that you could get before it's edited.
We're telling you guys, and blocked. We're trying to be the beacon.
But it's around the corner where they're gonna. Everything's gonna be censored. It just you can feel it, you can see it. The TPP is trying to make it happen.
Stand up and shout it out from the like you're on the top of a mountain, and we will all will sound loud, and the world will have to listen. Do it, people. Have Fuck courage. Yeah.
And like we spoke about earlier about with hard work, there is pride in hard work. There's pride in being an entrepreneur. You know, you're gonna fail, but. For now, capitalism still exists, and you could fucking invent the next best thing or start the next best company.
Yep.
I mean, we're doing a fucking podcast right now. I can't believe it.
Yep.
I'm shocked every time we do it.
And it's getting like
it blows
better
me away.
And better.
I'm so fucking lucky to be a part of this. Thank you, Matt, for having me.
It's my and pleasure.
Everybody out there, you are not a victim. You could fucking be something, and I hope you do it. If you have a dream, fulfill it.
Please.
Do all the work you have to do it.
And just as a intro to our outro, it's going to be Coop talking about who we are up against in the future. And this will happen, ladies and gentlemen. And again, refer back to G. Edward Griffin's talks about how the revolution is going to occur in America. Peace. We love you guys.
They haven't succeeded in getting the guns out of the hands of the American people, nor have they succeeded in taking our freedoms away. In fact, there's been a great awakening in this country and a big backlash against these Marxist, communist, puke-faced, lying, subversive, Nazi, jackbooted Gestapo thugs that is gaining momentum. And so I can tell you with a certainty, they must do something terrible in order to stop this backlash and regain the sympathy of the mass herds of sheeple out there. And I'm telling you, one of the things that will give us the moral high ground and will begin civil war is the day that they begin declaring martial law across this country, taking guns out of the hands of the American people, and rounding up American patriots. The war will start on that day. On that day. And there will be a war in this country, a civil war to restore, not a revolution, but a civil war to restore constitutional Republican government. Now, at the same time that that's going on, communist and Marxist underground forces will begin, or try to begin, a revolution in order to institute a Marxist, socialist, or communist government as a result of the Civil War. So we, patriots, will be fighting on two fronts. On two fronts. And you'd better understand which side you're going to be on. Restoration, revolution, or tyranny. I'll be fighting with the forces of restoration, and so should you better be.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story.
you're right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unheard. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Jump, jump.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up, stand up.
We can't give up the fight.
Stand up for your right.
Lord, Lord,
get up, stand up,
keep us troubling on.
Don't give up the fight.
Yeah,
we're sick and tired.